You know that feeling when your day finally slows down and you just want to relax, unplug, and feel good? That's where Mood.com comes in. They're changing the game, delivering legal THC products right to your door, no shady dealers, and absolutely no medical card required, just good vibes and better sleep, shipped straight from their farm to your couch. From delicious THC gummies, smooth vape pens, to premium THC flower, Mood has it all. And everything's federally legal under the 2018 Farm Bill. Yeah, this isn't some loophole. It's the real deal. Head to Mood.com and use code FIRST20 for 20% off your first order. That's MOOD.com. Find your mood.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I am Alex.
I'm Justin.
And we are coming to you semi-live from the Artist Alley Con floor here at New York Comic Con. And we are talking to the amazing Al Ewing. Al, welcome to the podcast.
Hello. Yeah, good to be here.
And by welcome to the podcast, I mean welcome to your booth.
Yeah, my own table.
Thanks for having us over.
Yeah, no, it's fine. It's the first time I've tabled in something like 6 or 7 years.
Yeah.
So it's been really great, like, talking to fans kind of face-to-face over here again. You know, I do it a lot at home, but generally when I come here, I just do a little paneling and sort of see everybody. But it's good to table again.
What made you want a table for this?
Well, they basically invited me to, and I thought, you know what, it has been a long time.
Yeah.
And I figured, you know, if people want to bring me out, I'll head out. I was considering not doing NYCC this year, basically just because I'd already been to New York earlier in the year for a wedding.
Ah.
So I thought, well, I can't really justify it twice.
Yeah.
But like, if they're gonna fly me, yeah, I can justify it. So yeah, I'll come over and I'll do the whole thing and I'll see all the lovely people and it'll be good.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I was wondering, just to keep talking about this, we've been standing here for a little while watching you. It'd be great to talk to fans, and that's awesome, but you don't have any stuff for sale. People usually have stuff for sale. What's the strategy there?
I mean, like I say, the plane's taken care of, the hotel's taken care of. Bringing a bunch of stuff over
that makes
would
it
involve
work.
A lot of custom stuff, probably a lot of cash paid to somebody or other. Now I could have got in touch with like Midtown or sort of Boom or somebody, but I'm not that organized.
Yeah.
And I'm very busy. Yeah. So I'm playing it like, and the advantage of this setup, is that I can hang out here for like a couple of hours in the morning. I can go away and do my own thing. I can come back for a couple of hours in the afternoon. I don't believe I've got any panels or signings on today. I don't think so.
It'd be a fun surprise.
Yeah. I mean, somebody would be very angry with me if I did. But like, yeah, I think, you know, but I have that freedom. I can just, anytime I want, anytime there's a lull, I can just get up and wander around.
That's great.
Speaking of lull, I'm just going to ask for this guy who's standing patiently. Would you like
absolutely.
To sign his thing
I
while
would
we're
like
chatting?
To sign.
This is the joy of Live at the Con podcast. This guy is going to sign Amazing Spider-Man Giant Size. Number one, I'm going to narrate it so that we have things going on the podcast. But Al has a lovely signature there. Very
wow,
nice.
You live covering the signing.
Yes.
The marker's hitting the page,
this
folks.
Like, there's like the Whatnot booth now or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's talk about the comics. You have so much stuff going on.
Yes,
and we've been loving everything you've been doing. I want to start, though, with an issue that blew our minds. Absolute Evil.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Number one. We've talked a lot about the spoilers, and I'll just put a spoiler warning since hopefully people have read it already. There's a bunch of big game-changing things that happen. And we've talked to Jason Aaron before. We talked to Tally Thompson before. We talked to Skeet Snyder. And I know you guys chat a lot. But how do you lay out these big plot beats? Like, just to say them plainly, Green Arrow dying, Hawkman being whatever, et cetera.
We have, like, a virtual room that we chat in every couple of weeks. and we talked about all this stuff in the room, and we had a whole conversation about, like, yeah, so we talked about, like, what to do with Green Arrow, and it was all based on there is an Absolute book coming up. Pulsec has big plans for that, and it's basically, okay, well, how do we fit with what you want to do and, like, what story you want to tell? And we were kind of, like, chatting about basically what to do with the ollie of it all. And, you know, if you want to talk to Pulsec, I think he's at the con about Green Arrow, so I won't spoil too much about, you know, what he's got to do there. But we were talking over, like, okay, is Ollie evil in this universe? Has he been corrupted by the evil energy? Because he is a billionaire. And I think we kind of ended up with, like, no, I think he should try to be a hero, but because he's, like, coming at it a little late and without the right... Yeah, he's sort of not... He's not quite enough, and he gets... And we were, like, it sort of turned into a thing where it was, like, oh, we should write Ollie very familiar.
Right. Mm.
We should do, like, a very familiar version of Ollie, because the familiar will not work. But, like, it's kind of... It's sort of the more drafts it went through, the more, like, the regular Green Arrow he got.
Right.
It was like notes came back, like, oh, well, you should make it a little more like the regular guy. And I was looking at it going, like, I don't need all of these pages in the Ollie scene. I need to, like, yeah. I'm going to cut that down. So, and I'm going to cut out the page where, like, he's revealing he's got feet of clay and, like, he's not a very good hero. And it's like, no, let's just have him just straight ahead, Ollie. Mm-hmm. The only hint you get is that he misses the Robin Hood shot.
Right.
He's close, but he's not close enough.
It must be wild working on something like this, especially in a group, because it's like sort of blue sky in a way. When, yeah, like, working in a main universe, there's so much continuity and so much, like, we all know what's happening here. And this is like, you can sort of go anywhere.
That is, I mean, I'm taking full advantage of that over in Green Lantern.
Yeah.
Because that was kind of the brief. It was like, how would you, I mean, the brief I got was like, I kind of, you know, like, I was given a couple of things to go away and think about. And, like, one of them was like, oh, well, you know, Batman doesn't have a cave now. He doesn't have a butler. He's like, he's not got any of the stuff. And Superman doesn't have the stuff. And, like, Wonder Woman's from hell. And it's like, you know, have a think about that. But also it was like, how would you reinvent Green Lantern, like, for today?
Yeah.
And I'd be like, well, I'd do it completely differently. And that and the kind of no X, no Y, no Z was like, okay, no ring, no lantern. And then it was like, well, we've kind of come back around to the ring. And there is a lantern. I was saying in an earlier interview, there was like, yeah, the title, the green, Absolute Green Lantern. Who's the Absolute Green Lantern in the book? It's that big thing, yeah, that's currently on the moon.
Yeah.
That's the Green Lantern. Mm. And yeah, there are a lot of them. There are a lot of these big objects.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're talking about which person is the Green Lantern, like, none of them. Joe has the green power.
Yeah.
And we're following her with it. She's like the anomaly of the green power. But the Green Lantern, it's a big thing. Yeah. And nobody really knows how it works.
One of the things you've been slowly spinning out in that book is the mythology through, yeah, language, which is really fascinating, I think. Because you're taking these words that we know and remixing,
yeah,
them in new,
like,
ways.
Half the names in the book, yeah, are like, half the names in the book are like still names. Like, Kilowog is still Kilowog. But, like, you know, Tomo Ray, it's like, I think he's like Ray something else now, but it's like Tomo, you know, technically speaking, John Mulaney is Tomo Joe. Yeah. Which, God, does sound very manga. Maybe what everybody's saying is right. I am accidentally writing a manga.
Do you not think that it's manga?
I don't follow manga. The only manga I read is, like, food cooking mangas.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Like, the closest I've gone to, like, an actual manga that people like is, like, Delicious in Dungeon.
Uh-huh.
I literally only read, like, cooking mangas and, like, you know, wine mangas.
That's so interesting.
I don't read or watch or follow any of the, like, the Dragon Ball Z stuff. I can't speak for, like, Genoi.
Well, I think the thing that I was struck by with the book, and the reason I immediately went there beyond the art style, is the pacing of it, that it feels like manga chapters is the way that you're breaking it up, which is a little different than I think what you'd expect from Western.
I was just thinking, like, I really wanted that first issue to be menacing, slow and menacing and very focused on the Black Hand.
Yeah.
And, like, kind of... just, again, just pacing it like, what if there had never been a comic before? but, like, yeah, what if there'd never been a Green Lantern comic before? But, like, and then sort of I'm slowly, like, every issue kind of something happens. And I know, like, what sometimes frustrates me is that comic readers seem to have different definitions of a thing happening.
Mm. Right, yes.
So, like, so, you know, I've seen people say, like, about Absolute Evil, like, oh, nothing happened at all in that issue. It was just people talking.
That's so crazy.
It was just people talking and a guy got bunked on the head. Yeah. And it's like...
Well, my takeaway, it's funny that you're hearing that, because I was like, this is the defining book of the Absolute Universe. It did the most to be, like, paint the picture, because you went through the history where, like, here's how small changes make this place what it is, and... I thought it was the biggest revelation.
It's Darkseid's universe. I mean, a lot of that was kind of, again, all of that was sort of talked through. We had some ideas about, like, the Justice Society. And, I mean, my main idea was that, and, you know, I guess Hawkman fans can blame me for this. But my idea was like, oh, do you know what? Carter Hall should absolutely spill his guts to the HUAC.
Yeah, it's
because
great.
it's Darkseid universe, it's evil universe. And you know, yeah, it's everything. All the evil things are more powerful. Well, all the horrible things have more oomph. And yeah, and then we kind of hinted at this that like. Ollie makes a fuss a lot, but he's not very effective. And he might have started to become effective if he'd started shooting arrows at people. But, like, he didn't get that far, unfortunately.
Well, and that's what
they're
I love about it.
They're already monitoring him.
I feel like the temptation would be, like, oh, it's an evil universe. All the heroes are villains. But actually, the heroes capitulating and just being weaker or worse is more
and
insidious.
And it's like there's nothing... The Sandman isn't, you know, he's not, like, a worse Sandman. The government just shot him in his basement. Yeah, I'm pretty sure in the regular universe, if the government had shot him in his basement, Wesley Dodds would also have had a shorter career.
Yeah, it works.
And, you know, like Wildcat, yeah, Wildcat took the money. Sorry, Wildcat fans.
Yes, no,
that is, I'm afraid, you know, in a universe filled with dark side energy where the most fundamental particle is an evil particle. Yeah, I'm sorry your hero didn't make it out. But, like, in the regular universe, he's still very cool.
Yeah.
in most universes, he's still very cool. Most universes run on normal energy.
Yeah.
but, like, and, yeah, you know, on Monroe, I just thought, well, we need like, a third one, and we need somebody. They can't all be from the 40s. We need somebody sort of from the 50s. And I had a vague memory that, like, I know, like, on Monroe is also sort of from the 40s, but I in my head, I was thinking, like, oh, he's like a kind of, he's one of these who sort of was retroactively created to fill a gap. I think that's more like Roy Thomas retroactively wanting to, oh, I want all the old Superman stories to have happened, so I better invent a new 1940 Superman.
Speaking of which, on the opposite end of the spectrum, anything you could tell us about Lex Luthor at the end of that issue?
Well, I will say that Jason very much directed my hands on, like, it was actually, like, last two pages, Luther comes up, he should be somewhere idyllic, he should be, you know, he should be a really nice guy, he should have hair, and I kind of, like, I sort of extrapolated on that and, like, ran that final scene past him, and, like, you know, Lex's musings, that was sort of all me, his wife being called Dora, that's one of mine, you can tell. It's the kind of gag I like to do.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Jason kind of approved it all. And, like, you know, for the future of Lex Luthor, he's the man to talk to.
Yeah. Let's flip it over and talk about your Marvel work, because we've been loving that as well. Venom is so good right now.
Oh, thank you.
So much fun. I'll be honest, I don't want to speak for you. We are not Venom guys. Our third podcaster very much is.
I think it's sort of part of the aim and intention of this book is to introduce Venom a little bit to non-Venom people, because the previous Venom series, which me and Ram started and I kind of brought to a brought to a landing.
Yeah.
any landing you walk away from. But no, I brought it in. I brought it into land. It was very much into like the esoterica and the, you know, the symbioteness of Venom and really getting deep into the lore of Venom. So deep that like people were starting to get a bit freaked out by it. It was right. Like, you know, we were going deep in the cave. So I knew that like post Venom War doing a new number one with a new host, and like originally it was going to be, oh, we got to do the mystery. We got to do who is Venom. And then it's like, oh, yeah. Now we've got to decide who actually is Venom.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, Mary Jane's free. Well, that settles that. But, you know, we were like, we really wanted to do that kind of mystery thing. And then we kind of, you know, explored the ramifications. And now we're kind of getting into Venom as basically a book about a spider hero or somebody trying to be a spider hero. And only very occasionally threatening to eat a brain. And maybe a little less occasionally as time goes on. There was a line I didn't, because Nick kind of introduced, I had this line in my head. It was like, oh, I'll drop this one. This will be great at the panel. This will go down a storm. But like the way Nick kind of introduced me, he went straight into like, and who's this? And so I was like, oh, okay. So I didn't get to say it. But it's like, we're a book that is having a party on the crumbling edge of a cliff over a very dark ocean. And, you know, the cliff is not in great shape, but the music's just getting louder and the dancing's just getting crazier. And it's still going to be fun for a while. It's still going to be a lot of fun for a while. My idea for Venom 250, and they said, look, you can't do this, was to have all 40 pages be about the Skrull guy. To just have Venom doesn't appear at all. Yeah. It's just all about, like, where's Null, what's going on with Null?
Well,
and they were like, no, we got to have some more. Come on, we just had MJ come out of a breakup. It's the anniversary issue. We got to introduce people to MJ.
Yeah.
And I was like, you're right, we have to. So then I thought, oh, she goes and sees her agent.
Yeah,
she does some
love
great
that.
Peter Parker stuff. Yes. It's going to be fantastic.
I love. Sorry, you.
No, no, no. You do love that scene. So
yes,
talk about it.
I just thought you really captured being an actor as someone who, like, I don't act as much anymore, but was an actor for a long time. Really nailed the idea of being like, this sucks, but yes, I'll do whatever you have coming for me. But having Mary Jane sort of become the Peter of the book, I thought, like, it just works so well while also having sort of the connection between Mary Jane and Venom as exes of Peter in a way. Like, Peter's there, but it doesn't have to be that. We don't miss him.
People were like, very, because they did that. Marvel did that, like, that wedding homage cover, which I saw that and I was like, oh my God, whose idea was that? And like, Jordan was like, my idea. And I was like, well, don't have another one.
Yeah.
No, I mean, John, I thought it went down well. Everybody had a good time with it. It's a really good cover.
Yeah.
It's a great cover. I love it. It did give the impression that Mary Jane and Venom were in a relationship now, which is like, no, they're roommates. They're the world's strangest roommates.
Yeah.
Venom, you know, to my knowledge, likes dudes. It's like...
Can we talk about their other roommate then? We were actually chatting with our friend, Jordan
the
D. White.
The world's most dumped roommate.
Yes.
Yeah.
Paul, love this. Well, what I keep calling it like the Comedy Central roast of Paul is the line that I keep using.
I mean, it's
crazy how you have a book that the book hates Paul as much as the fans do.
Well, this is it. It's like I'm kind of trying to like get that balance where like the aim of the game, the goal, and I don't think I'm going to be able to do it. I don't think it's within my powers, was to turn Paul into like a sort of adorable sitcom dweeb.
Yeah, he's like the Dwight Schrute of the spider.
But he's like, so, you know, to kind of defang him, to like remove his power, to remove this kind of toxic power he has over the readership.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to speak for Spider-Man readership because I think we know kind of how that works, but it's definitely working on me. Like, I think you feel sympathy for him, because particularly like Dylan is dumping on him so much all the time.
Well, I mean, we will see him again. We won't see him again immediately because he is going to be successful in finding that new apartment. But, you know, he's part of the supporting cast, and I'm like, you can't tell me to just boot a perfectly good dweeb out of my book.
He's useful.
He's a perfectly usable dweeb. I'm not, I don't have this weird, and it is a little weird. I'm not one of these people who thinks that, like, it should be 20, the book should be 20 pages of MJ crawling over some broken glass so she can apologize on her knees to Peter Parker. You know, it's like, yeah, nah, come on.
I mean, I'm
we're trying to have fun here. Please bring your vibes out of that.
The most exciting part about the book is the tone, I feel like.
Yeah,
you've chose this tone that is so different, and yet, like you're saying, you can the crumbles are there. Like, you can start to really see it.
Yeah, I mean, you can see it. Like, basically, every time, is it MJ or is it Venom losing their temper? Venom just, like, is just... every sort just threatens to kill somebody.
Yeah.
And it's like, right, I'm going to kill you. And it's like, and they don't really, it's always circumstances that stop them. They don't really, you know, it's like, is there going to come a point?
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah, that's a big question. But to get briefly back to Paul, he does get, I did spoil that he was going to have a bad day because he's in the art for that we revealed for 253. So people know Sundberg. And like, I did spoil that he's going to have a very bad day in that issue. But there's also one of my favorite Paul jokes, which I want to tell you because it's the funniest. And it's one of those times when you're writing something, it's like, oh, that's funny. I'm very satisfied with myself. I'm laughing at my own joke.
Yeah, it's a win.
But it's like, it's in 253. It's a really good, like, Paul bit that kind of... But it's the first Paul bit that sort of doesn't rely on, like, hating on him.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'll be sort of dangling that in front of the reader. But it is a bit about how Paul is kind of a doofus.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, not...
We like Paul. I think we can say...
I think so.
You've
I think
successfully turning the corner with Paul.
Yeah. I mean, he's, you know... He's not terrible. You know, we should be eating more veganly.
Yeah.
We really should.
Yes.
We should really be.
Yeah.
He's making some interesting points.
You know. I mean, yeah, I eat vegan burgers myself. It's
Not bad.
When I can't get it. No.
Yeah, as a last possible resort.
I do want to ask you, there were two things that were announced yesterday at the Spider-Man panel.
Yeah.
One is Death Spiral, which is going to be correct me if I'm wrong, but it's a one-shot, 9 parts. It's going to spin off, in no pun intended, into Spider-Man and Venom, and then presumably there's like an Omega-type issue at the end?
I mean, we're kind of starting off the exact structure of the thing. I think as we're definitely all pitching on that sort of alpha, that issue one special. I don't know if there's going to be the Omega. I think you'll have to... I think we're all doing sort of... I think we're doing 3 issues each, maybe. It's...
All right, well, don't worry about that.
I've got to pull up my Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah, exactly.
We could save that for the spreadsheets. I mean, in terms of the story, it sounds like it's going to be a very tight event, like a small cast.
It's tight, it's fast-moving, it's... somebody did ask about, like, are other Spider people like Miles going to be involved? And it's like, no, it's kind of a 3-way thing. It's like Venom and Carnage have been kind of linked, you know, going in these different directions for a while.
Yeah.
Having them come together is a good opportunity for them to, like, see what the other has become.
Yeah.
In the meantime... Both Venom and Carnage have been through some change that Peter doesn't know about.
Right.
And him finding out about this will be because, you know, Ben happened to be in town where, like, even outside MJ's book, it's a sitcom. It's a sitcom beat. But, like... yeah, basically, Peter's got a lot of stuff he's going to find out about at once. Him and MJ have got to have a talk.
Yeah.
Like, about stuff, but like, and I don't know what that talk looks like yet. I haven't written it yet.
Wow.
I don't want to be like making any big promises about it, because honestly, deep in my heart, I'm not 100% sure what the big problem is with, if you're in a hell dimension for 4 years, you know, if my other half was in a hell dimension for 4 years with a perfectly attractive dude, I'd be like, yeah, fucking go for it.
Yeah.
Like, 4 years in a hell dimension. Yeah, you know. It's like, I mean, maybe I'm more laid back. I am wearing a leather harness as we speak. But like, you know.
It's the harness talking.
Let me ask you about the other event down the road, which I'm sure you can't say a lot about, but this is Queen in Black spinning off of that revelation.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I can say a bit about it. It's got Hella, it's got Null. Hella and Null, as we have seen, are at cross purposes, in that Null's in a cage.
Yeah.
And Hella seems to have all of his stuff. We've got a 5-issue miniseries starring Null, in which I'm being helped out with by Tom Waltz. And in fact, Tom Waltz is doing the lion's share on that. I'm sort of stunning. I'm plotting and sort of giving like rough like layouts and some dialogue bits here and there. Tom is doing the rest, and the cash is being split accordingly. I'm only taking a little bit. No, I'm always thinking, like, if I'm doing a quarter of the work, I get a quarter of the money.
Oh, that's very good.
But like, yeah, but Tom's doing a lot on this, and I really love his work. He's got a real epic quality to his scripting. He kind of, it's fans of Null, I don't think, are going to be disappointed with this book at all. Fans of the other characters, Jordan mentioned at the panel, there's a big character, big Marvel character who's going to come up against Null. Solicits will probably end up revealing that one. But I won't speak the name now. But it's big, and fans of that character are going to love the way that Tom writes him.
Yeah.
And, you know, with, I'll admit, this, I like this character too, so I did drop a lot of dialogue in there.
Yeah.
Like, but, you know, it's Tom as well.
The Queen in Black thing, that's an event that you're writing later on next year.
Yeah, no, that one, yeah, that's going to be on me. Okay. I'll block that one out. It's going to be like, it's going to be a very, like, cosmic. But also, cosmic in like the space sense. There's going to be like a lot. I mean, I mentioned on the panel, like, Null and Hella, you know, when they fight, people are going to get caught in the crossfire. And like, by people, I mean planet Earth.
Yeah.
It's like, so everybody's going to have to get involved with this. It's going to be different from, it's going to be different from King and Black was. It's going to be kind of different vibe, different themes, building on it rather than doing a King and Black 2. But it's going to be, hopefully, it's the size and the epic scale of King and Black, because obviously, you know, that's a big shoe to fill, and I'm very aware of that.
We've taken up a lot of your time, but I did want to ask you about one more thing real quick. Just, you're right, doing a great run on Thor. You went from a big mythology Thor with a mortal Thor to sort of like cleaning everything away, starting fresh with Thor. You did the same thing with Venom, where you started with heavy mythology Venom and clear it away and start with something Venom. Yeah. Normally you hear from writers that, like, they have their take. They have their one, like, what's my one shot on Captain America? This is what I'm doing with Captain America. So how do you approach that? How do you have your take, wash your take out of your head, and start a new take?
I mean, with Venom, it was basically, I thought the book needed it. I thought the book needed, like, a little freshening up.
Yeah.
For, like, the kind of, the next chapter. With Thor, it was kind of baked in from the start. it was part of the plan from the start was to do, we'll do the Immortal Thor and then we'll do the Mortal Thor. And then, you know, we'll go into the third act from there. And I mean, you know, there was discussion about, like, okay, is it going to be, is the Mortal Thor going to be Immortal Thor issues 26 to 50? And in the end, we were like, no, we kind of want that title, but we don't want to get too spoilery with it, which is why, and apologies to retailers, I know there's a little confusion about whether it's called Thor or the Mortal Thor. We do refer to it as the Mortal Thor, but like, you know, whatever's on the order form.
Yeah.
Just tick that box. Just tick that box.
Just tick that box. Al, thank you so much for your time. Big fan of your work. Appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of the con.
Thank you. Thanks so much.